Welcome to the You've Got to Read This podcast, which is part of the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Library digital branch. In these recordings, we discuss books we think you're really going to want to check out. I'm Cameron, a librarian at University City Regional Library, and I will be discussing The Elephant in the Room, One Fat Man's Quest to Get Small in a Growing America by Tommy Tomlinson.
I'm Christy, a children's librarian at Morrison Regional Library, and I'm going to talk about Scythe by Neil Schusterman.
I'm Kate Hill, a library assistant at University City Regional Library, and I'm going to talk about All-Star Superman by Grant Morrison. You can find these titles through the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Library catalog. Go to www.cmlibrary.org and choose the green catalog button.
Today I'm going to talk about The Elephant in the Room by Tommy Tomlinson. Tommy Tomlinson is a reporter and columnist in the Charlotte Observer newspaper for a long period of time, and in this book he chronicles his weight loss journey and his struggles with lifelong obesity. The government definition of obesity is a body mass index of 30 or more. His body mass index was 60.7. His shirt sizes were extra, 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 extra large, so that is six X's, and he has had a waist of 60 inches. And so he knew that he had a lifelong addiction with food and that he struggled with the addiction at all times. He was raised in a family that loved food, and he'd been aware of the problem for years, seeing doctors and trying different diets. But nothing seemed to work, and every time he tried to make a change, it didn't go how he planned. He also chronicles in this book a lot of the other struggles that other people face in their plus-size attempts at losing weight, and he really sees that it's a problem for a lot of different people. Of course, we all know that as a nation, we've struggled a lot with obesity over the years, but he just goes on a journey to try to understand how he can make a change in his life and do things differently. And I think the best thing I got from this book is that you can take practical steps. We all can try and just see what works, and through trial and error, if you are overweight. I can speak from personal experience that I've struggled with weight loss in my life, and going through different diets and different life changes, it doesn't always stick, of course. And so you kind of go through different things and try to see what works, but ultimately you have to find within what is going to actually make you change more psychologically than anything, because that really overpowers everything. It's like they say, mind over body. It really affects, you know, your emotions and the struggles that you have with dieting and weight loss.
That's really interesting to me. So what would you say was like one thing that you took away from this that you like really integrated into your personal life?
I'd say the one thing that I took away is that we all have different levels of desire for weight loss, and we all want to try different things, but just knowing not to give up and knowing that even when you fail at one type of dieting, or you do gain 25 more pounds after you've lost a lot of weight, just know that it's not the end of everything in the world. And I think another thing that really I could relate to from what I read in his story is he was, by all means, he was on the verge of a path of going towards death, so to speak, because he was at risk for heart disease, diabetes, stroke, and all of those kind of often go hand in hand with obesity. So just kind of reframing and understanding that the need for change is great, and that's, I think, psychologically something that I incorporated, just knowing that if you kind of reframe how you think and think that it's a struggle, but different things are worth trying, and something might work and stick.
You talked a little bit about the risks that he had going on. Was there a moment that he talks about that kind of solidified that he was going to go on this journey and really attempt to change, or was it just kind of a buildup over time?
It was a buildup over time, and I think because he had struggled with it for so long and realizing that addiction component, I think we all kind of don't always understand how overpowering addiction can be until we really face that and know, get it really at the heart of the addiction. And when you step back and you say, wait a minute, I have to go to Wendy's and eat this, and then, but you don't really. And we use food a lot for social reasons. So going out to eat with someone, you think, oh, I'm going to a nice restaurant and I have to eat. But there's so many other things you can do with people that don't have to revolve around food. So that was another change, going back to Christy's comment too, that I think has made me think differently, is that you don't always have to go to food for the source of taking care of your problems, so to speak. So I think it was that kind of wake-up call for him, and realizing that he's gone through this for a lifetime and just needing to find some way to make a change.
I did realize a long time ago that of all the addictions, food addiction is like the most unique, because you can entirely stop drinking, you can entirely stop smoking and survive, you can entirely stop doing heroin, hopefully you can, but you can't stop eating entirely. And food is like permeates every aspect of our lives in every way. So it is dealing with an addiction on a totally different, very instinctual level. I mean, we have to eat to survive. So it's not like one of those other things. But you can say, okay, I have an addiction to Wendy's specifically. That doesn't mean that I can't go have an apple instead.
Exactly. I think that's the key, is just realizing that there are other alternatives and different choices that we can make. And I think also going to your point about the, as an addiction, there are other addictions that you can try to resolve and end, but food is, it does permeate everything we do. We have to eat, and it's often a source of reward. I mean, all addictions can be a source of reward, but food especially, it's an easy thing to pick up a package of chips and just, oh, this is good. And then, you know, it all goes downhill from there.
Now, I hope you're not saying that I still can't have a piece of cake on my birthday.
No, you can have your piece of cake once a year. That's okay.
Well, talking about food and how it affects people in society, I know that everybody out there probably wishes that they had some magic thing that technology could do to just make them the perfect weight. In this book that I'm going to talk about, Scythe by Neil Schusterman, this has happened, basically, but not only with nanobots controlling your percentage of body fat depending on what you eat and letting you gain weight or not as needed. Society as a whole has changed in a really big way. Technology has changed the fact that there's no more poverty, there's no more war. AI is running the whole world. There's no more government. People can live indefinitely, because a lot of the health, almost every health condition has been cured. They have found a cure for it. So when you're talking about diabetes and cancer and, you know, high blood pressure, that's been taken care of. They don't have to worry about that anymore. They don't have to worry about being obese. They don't have to worry about getting sick. They don't even have to worry about if they fall into a manhole and die by accident. They can be recovered. They'll just go get revived and woke up again, and it'll be like nothing ever happened. The AI basically saves their current level of memories talking through the nanobots in their body. So, like, everything, as long as it's hooked into the Thunderhead, is what they call this AI that basically rules everything, except one thing, death. Thunderhead has access to there's very few spots out there that don't have access to Thunderhead. But if you're anywhere else in the world, he can back you up and he can revive you with no memory loss whatsoever. Your body totally repaired and recovered. Kind of makes me wonder if you're still the same person, though. I mean, technically, maybe. But also, it's like when they talk about transporting in Star Trek. Yeah, you're like gone. They like totally dissolve you and then they recombine you somewhere else. Are you the same person, or did that other person just die? That's a good question. Yeah.
So it almost seems, though, it'd be too good to be true. So what are the consequences of, for example, them minimizing body fat? I mean, there has to be something that, some ramification for that on some level, or else you could just for infinity always have no, you'll always be the same body weight. So is there any kind of consequences or hindsight or catch 22 to that?
Well, so people can age. They still can age if they wish to. You're allowed to age. But most people rejuvenate fairly often, and it can set you back down as physically to an age of biologically to about in your early 20s. And they're currently working on ways to get into your teens, but like, why would anybody go back to being a teenager? No, thank you indeed. But some of the ramifications are that since all of this disease has been defeated and you're basically immortal, there still does need to be a little bit of a curb on the population. And a basic element of humanity has been determined that we still need to have a little bit of mortality. And so Scythe is a kind of about the group that manages mortality in this perfect society. They still have to go out and kill people. And they have a group of people that are trained, and they're supposed to be the best of the best, the most honest, the most moral, the most just in society. But there's a problem. So the Thunderhead controls everything except the Scythe. The AI is not allowed to decide who lives and who dies. Only people are. And so those are the Scythes. However, there is a schism in the Scythedom. So there are two groups fighting for control over the future of Scythes. And one group basically decides that, you know what, I have a quota of death that I have to do every quarter. I'm going to do it all in once. I'm going to mass murder a whole building full of people or a whole plane full of people. That's how I'm going to scythe. Other people say that's wrong. You shouldn't just do it. Things like that, you should, you know, do a little bit at a time, and you should be journaling. It's a requirement by law that you're supposed to journal about your experience as a scythe, and that those journals are considered public property so that anybody can read those later, and your musings about mortality and death and everything. So
it sounds like those would be a really interesting read. Is that the perspective of the book?
There are elements of the Scythedom and the journal entries. So there's journal entries from one of the major players of the old guard, basically. And then there's journal entries, which are really chilling, from the one that is basically leading the new guard. We can mass murder a whole bunch of people and get Scythedom over, and we can live like rock stars instead of having to be modest. And we can put gemstones on our gowns instead of having to wear these drab colors, you know. So, so the entries from the new guys, they're pretty scary. They're very, if you read anything psychologically about sociopaths and serial killers, you're like, oh gosh, he fits so many of these boxes. It's scary.
That is absolutely who you want in charge of who gets to live and who gets to die. And I don't mean that at all.
Yeah, it seems like a great idea to get a sociopath or a psychopath in charge of killing people. Yeah, good plan. And unfortunately, the Thunderhead can't do anything about it. So there's a lot of there's some interesting entries from the Thunderhead as well, especially in the second book. So you can read just the first book and be satisfied. Read just Scythe by Neil Schusterman. There is a second book, Thunderhead. If you read Scythe, you can finish and be like, okay, I'm good. But if you like to read more, I will tell you that if you read Thunderhead, you will be like freaking out for the next book. And it is not published yet, and I cannot wait for it to be published. But it really leaves you on a cliffhanger.
Do they have a projected publishing date for the next one?
I believe the end of this year, so I'm extremely excited.
Have they announced the title as well?
Yes, the title of the third book is The Toll, which is, if you read Thunderhead, will make total sense. Paying a toll, but also a bell tolling. Who does the bell toll for? It tolls for thee. So it's really, really very interesting.
I would have used the word ominous, but interesting works too.
Ominous is another good word.
All right, so then I said I wanted to talk about All-Star Superman by Grant Morrison, and this title has been out for a little while. The story is complete as far as the issues in the series go. Superman is facing his own mortality, and I think the idea that Superman can die is sort of fascinating. We all know about kryptonite and his weakness to that, but in this particular case, Lex Luthor has devised a plan to get Superman nearly to the sun in order to save some explorers who are like astronauts. And in so doing, Superman does go and save these people, and he brings them back and has overloaded his own cells. So, you know, we always talk about Superman being incredibly powerful and that his power comes from the sun, but it's a little bit like he's now an overcharged battery and he is dying, and there is nothing that anyone can do about this. So Lex Luthor has finally accomplished his task. Superman is dying, but it isn't immediate. He has some time. And what is Superman going to do with the time he has left? And of course, he doesn't want to tell anybody, you know, outside of, you know, a select few that this is happening, but he has to essentially prepare the world for a world without him now. Of course, we've become very reliant on him to battle monsters, and the monsters are still coming, and aliens, and Lex Luthor is, of course, not going away anytime soon, although he has been imprisoned, but of course he's Lex Luthor. So he's still up to trouble. But what is he going to do in his spare time? What are really the important things to Superman? And it's really interesting to watch him decide what his priorities are in his final days. And to see a man who is an alien, but also essentially impenetrable in a lot of ways and nearly omnipotent, be brought to his knees in such a slow and kind of insidious way is fascinating and emotional.
That is the question of mortality itself, isn't it? Right? Like, you at one point are very at the height of your power. You can do all these amazing things. And then slowly and inevitably, it's just not the same anymore.
And much like humanity, you know, we know one day we are going to die. Some way, somehow, we're going to die. And, you know, we have a lot of tokens and religions and a lot of different things that we do to help comfort ourselves in those times, like when we think about these things or when we lose someone important to us. But what does an alien, someone outside of like our human constructs, have to comfort him in knowing he's about to die?
But I guess it just goes back to, I guess the villain has to win sometimes, right?
I think no story is exciting if the villain doesn't have a chance to win. If the villain can't win, then there's no real story. And I think Lex Luthor is iconic because he doesn't have superpowers, but he's still bringing the most powerful person in the world down.
The villain is interesting because Lex Luthor is basically acting like the Deathbringer to Superman. He's acting like a scythe in some ways. That's very interesting. But the fact that he's an enemy, that's how most people see. You know, the villain is death. And it doesn't always have to be. And I think that's one of those aspects where, like, when people are trying to change their lives for a health reason, it really means that they are saying, I don't want to die in this way. They're trying to take more control over how that end eventually will come and say, I don't want to die like that. Another way is better.
Or at the very least, they're prolonging how long they'll be around, or better chances of being around longer.
Stay
a little longer. Yeah. Yeah. Superman, he's been, I mean, in the eyes of people, nearly invincible, and now he has to figure out what's important to him in the last few days. It's interesting, and it's still got a lot of like fun superhero romp time where you're battling, you know, invasions, and he's got his friends around him, but in the back of your mind, you know, through all of these things, he knows he's dying.
Does he make time for the people that he loves?
That is a big component of the story, yes, and revealing perhaps some secrets that he might have otherwise kept to himself. But it's also in the back of your mind, you're going, oh, no! But,
All right, well, thanks for joining us. You can find the titles that we talked about today. We have The Elephant in the Room by Tom Tomlinson, Scythe by Neil Schusterman, and All-Star Superman by Grant Morrison. You can find them all through the Charlotte Mecklenburg Library catalog. Go to cmlibrary.org and choose the green catalog button. You can search by title, author, or keyword, and you will see all the available formats, print, ebooks, and audiobooks. If it's not at your branch, you can place a hold and have it sent there.
Thank you again for joining us for You've Got to Read This. We hope we've given you a good discussion and some ideas for new material to read. Look for upcoming episodes on the digital branch at digitalbranch.cmlibrary.org. You can scroll down and select the Listen Now button for You've Got to Read This. Please visit the library's website at cmlibrary.org and check out the library's catalog and resource pages. You can also find us on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and Instagram. #CMLibrary and @CMLibrary. Library.